Shalom Aleichem.
All right, so we continue with the theme that we've discussed the last couple of shiurim, namely the breakdown of the halachic system. That is why tonight's shiur was advertised as the breakdown of the halachic system. I think in the last two shiurim we explained to a large extent why this system is broken down. We explained that Rabbanim, Bachorei Yeshiva, who then go on to become Rabbanim, are taught that really, essentially, they cannot know or understand anything of their own, based on their own understanding, based on their own study, and they are required to follow certain halachic norms and opinions that have been established over a period of many generations, simply because, or mainly because, it was written in such and such a thing was written in a certain book at a certain time, and that book was printed, and people got to saw it, and that became the standard opinion. And now, henceforth, it's impossible to challenge this position. You're not allowed to think or to question, essentially. And therefore, Rabbanim, by and large, rather than being people who can delve into an halachic issue and discuss any particular question on its own merits based on the sources in front of them, and keep in mind, by the way, that we have it today in front of us, many more sources than were available to many posukim in earlier times, for all kinds of reasons, all kinds of books, manuscripts, etc., or more accurate versions of texts that we had, but we had in incorrect versions of such texts, such as the Rambam or the Talmud Bavli or what have you. Many of these texts were either censored or simply corrupted for other reasons, extraneous reasons. And the long and the short of it is that if someone like the Bach or the Shach or the Taz, hundreds of years ago in Europe, had only one version of the Talmud Bavli he could look at, or only one version of the Rambam that he could look at, today, and the version that they had was often not a very accurate version, today, because of the fact that it's very, you just have to, on the internet, you just, two clicks on the internet and you have, for example, the entire Rambam, Mishneh Torah, the Rambam, according to the most accurate manuscripts in existence on earth, all right? Temani manuscripts recognized by all to be extremely accurate, the most accurate available. The same is true of the Mishnah. Shimon, I think someone's going to come to the door and it's locked. I don't know who it is. I'm not locked. The same is true of the Mishnah, the same is true of the Talmud, the same is also true of the Tur and the Shulchan Aruch. All these texts, the versions that were available hundreds of years ago, were few and far between. Basically, in any given period, usually there was only one version of the Tur or one version of the Rambam that was available, and it was not particularly accurate, sometimes heavily censored. And in fact, we'll discuss such an example in what we're about to discuss tonight. If you want to come closer, you're welcome to this room. What I'm going to try and demonstrate this evening is just how far gone we are, how far this process has deteriorated, and how serious the issues that we face are. And as a result of this present halachic system, we are not able to deal with those issues. Let us begin at the beginning. A simple place, a good place to begin. Let's start in Sefer Shemot, in the Torah. says in Sefer Shemot, Perek Toyeth Pasuk Kaf. We're talking here about the Makkah of Barad in Eretz Mitzrayim, right? The plague of a great hailstorm in Mitzrayim, which destroyed, which killed all the cattle, etc. It says in Pasuk Kaf, Hayare Ef Devar Adonai Me'avdeh Par'o. Those amongst the servants of and people who followed Par'o, who feared Hashem, in other words, those who knew that when Moshe said this is what's going to happen, that you can take his word for it, what did they do? They gathered their slaves, their workforce, and their animals inside the houses, under shelter, so they wouldn't be killed by the hail. Wa'asher lo sam libo al devar Adonai, but those who took no notice of what Hashem said, or what Moshe said in the name of Hashem, they left their cattle and their workers in the fields, and they were hoping that nothing would happen. Now we know what happened, and there was a great hailstorm, and it says presently, I'll read those psukim as well. It goes on to say, there was a very great hailstorm with fire. Kaved me'od, asher lo haya chamohu b'chol eretz Mitzrayim. There was never such a thing in Mitzrayim. Me'az hayetha l'goy, from the day that it was had become an organized nation, which is actually a very, very long time, because Egypt was, some say, the earliest great empire that was ever formed, perhaps. One of the earliest, certainly. So we're talking about a very long period of time. There was never such a thing. The hail destroyed everything that was out in the fields. Men and beasts were at kol ase basadeh, hikar barad, and all the crops and all the things that grew in the field, everything was destroyed. And all the trees were destroyed, were broken and smashed. Alright, so we know that there were very few animals left, or at least many of the animals in Mitzrayim had been killed in this storm. And yet we find later, when after Paro decides to allow Bnei Israel to leave Mitzrayim, and Paro decides to pursue them, it says in Perek Yod Dalet, Pasuk, Wow, Vayasor Eth Rikhbo, Paro gave the order for his chariot to be prepared, with Amo Lakahimo, he took his army with him, Vayikah Shesh Me'oth Rechev Bahur, and he took with him 600 of the best chariots. Now chariots obviously don't drive by themselves, they're pulled by horses. V'chol Rechev Misraim, V'sharishim Al Kulo. Alright, so what do we find on this pasuk? We find in the Mechilta, the Rabbi Ishmael, Parashat B'Shalach, on this pasuk, it says as follows. It's Parasha Aleph. It says, Vayikach shesh me'oth rechev bahur. The Mechilta asks, Mishel mi hayu abbehemof, shayu to'anim ha'merkavoth. Where did these animals come from that were drawing, that were pulling these chariots? Im tomah mishel misraim hayu, v'halokva ne'ma v'yamot kol mikne misraim. If you say that these animals belong to the Egyptians, then we said earlier that all the animals were killed in the hailstorm. Ve'im tomar mishel paro hayu halok va'ne'emar hine Adonai hoya b'miknech asher basadeh. And if you say it belongs, the animals that belong to Paro, it says also regarding
Paro's animals, they also will be destroyed in this storm. Obviously, Paro didn't believe there was going to be such a storm. He wasn't one of the God-fearing ones. He didn't take his animals inside. He left them out in the field, and they were killed like everybody else's. So all of Paro's stables, his war stables with thousands of horses and the beasts of burden for agriculture, all these were destroyed. Mitzrayim was in very bad shape. As Paro's servants say to him, "Hateren tedaki avadam Mitzrayim." Have you not realized that Mitzrayim is basically on its knees? So the state of affairs was very, very dire indeed.
Ve'im tomar mishal Yisrael hayu walo kvar ne'emar v'gam mikanenu yelech imanu v'lo tishe'er parsa.
If you say these animals that Paro took for his chariots, these 600 chariots, belong to the Yisraelim, to the Ivrim, well, they took their animals with them. They didn't leave them behind. Moshe said so explicitly to Paro, "We're going to take our animals with us." So where do these animals come from?
Ela shel mi hayu shel hayareth devar Adonai.
These were the animals that were saved by those Egyptians who were God-fearing, let's not be too generous, perhaps. Not necessarily God-fearing, but scared, and didn't want to take a risk. They didn't have insurance for their animals, so they took them inside, into the barns and the stables. These are called Hayareth Devar Adonai in the Pasuk, which is maybe perhaps a rather generous appellation for these people. So that's what they did, and their animals were saved. Therefore, we understand that from here, inexorably, we have to reach the conclusion, therefore, says the Mechilta, which I didn't mention, but I should have mentioned, is a Midrash Halacha, a very ancient work on Sefer Shemot. Therefore, we see from here that those who were, the Dafka, the best of the Egyptians, the ones who were inclined to believe Moshe and take him at his word, and who thought that in fact if this is what Hashem said he's going to do, this is what's going to happen. The ones who therefore saved their animals from the hail, they were the ones who eventually were a takala Israel. Takala means they were the ones who supplied the wherewithal for Paro to go and pursue the Jews. They later gave their animals to Paro. They weren't Paro's animals, he didn't have his own were destroyed. They weren't the other Egyptians. It can only be the Yareth Devar Hashem. They gave their animals to Paro, so that he could chase the Jews.
Mikan haya Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai omer.
Based on this understanding and this reasoning that we just explained, Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai said,
"Tov shebagoyim harog, tov shebanahashim rasos af moho."
Literally, the best of goyim, of non-Jews, kill. We'll explain in a moment what that means.
Tov shebanahashim rasos af moho.
The best of snakes, you should crush its skull. That's what it says. This should be relatively easy for us to understand, by the way, particularly if you've been listening to the news the last few weeks. We've had quite a number of cases in the country of people being bitten by snakes. There always have been snakes near Eretz Yisrael, and this is the season, this is the time when they're out and about and eating and breeding, etc. But it seems to be more than most years. I don't recall actually any time with so many reports of snake attacks. The idea behind that, what's the problem with snakes? Unless you're an expert, then you don't really know. If you happen to find yourself looking at a snake, you don't actually know what kind of a snake it is. It might be harmless, or the kind that's poisonous, but not to a human. You can only kill a mouse with its venom, but you can't really hurt a human. There are many such snakes in Israel as well, but there are a few, two or three types that are actually very dangerous for human beings as well. Unless you know, then you don't take a risk. What do? If you can, there's a snake there, and you see it, you kill it. Whatever you have, you crush its skull, you stand on its head, you throw a rock on its head, you do whatever you do, you kill it. Even though it may not be the kind that might have harmed you, because you don't take a chance. Now, that's what Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai here says about snakes. So that's, first of all, it's a practical piece of a good piece of advice, a practical piece of information for all of us to know in all places where you have snakes, including here. The same applies to goyim, but why? What kind of goyim? It's v'day not. It's not the case that Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai meant to say that you can just kill any non-Jew at your pleasure. That's v'day not the case. We know this for a fact. There are many explicit proofs that this is not so. Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai is referring to a case where, to a situation where one is in a state of war with another, with an enemy population. In that situation, any member of that enemy population, says Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai, is to be considered potentially dangerous, because you don't know. He may be one of those people who are harmless. He belongs to that enemy group, but he's harmless. He doesn't intend to do anything. He's just worried about making a living, like many of them might be. But he also may not be that kind of person. He may, in fact, not be the kind of person to risk his neck and get involved in military or violent activities, but he may pass on some information, something he saw right when he came to work. He saw something, the Jews are doing this, they said this, I heard something else. That sort of thing he may mention to a friend of the neighborhood, and that gets passed on down the line to someone else, and this helps their war effort against us. So you don't know who you're dealing with. Therefore, says Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai, Tov shebaguim harov. And that's what and this is exactly how it's quoted also in Masechet Soferim. And there it says explicitly, Tov shebaguim harov, the same statement, but it adds the two words, b'sha'af milchama, a time in wartime. This halakha, and it is a halakha as I'm about to demonstrate, this halakha is quoted by, last time I counted, if I'm not mistaken, was 16 Rishonim. Alright, so it's not exactly an unknown halakha, and it is a halakha. It's quoted by Rishonim in halachic context. And it's also brought in the Shulchan Aruch in two places. Well, actually, before I mention the Shulchan Aruch, I'm sorry, I should mention the Rambam, because, as is often the case, what the Shulchan Aruch is actually doing is simply quoting from the Rambam. The Shulchan Aruch tends to do that very often. So might as well quote the source. So the source is as follows. The Rambam says, Perek Asiri in Ilchot Avodah Zarah, Halacha Aleph. En korethim berith le'ovdei avodah zarah. We are not allowed here in Eretz Yisrael, in other words, we're talking about when the Jewish people live in Eretz Yisrael, we are not allowed to make any kind of a treaty or pact with goyim who worship avodah zarah here in Eretz Yisrael. Kedesh she'na'aseh imam imahen shalom v'naniach otam le'ovdam, by which pact we would agree to allow them to remain here in Eretz Yisrael and to let them continue worshipping Avodah Zarah as they want to do. Sheneemar lo fichroth lahem berith, as it says in the Torah in Devarim Perek Zayin, do not make a pact with these people. Ela yahzaru me'avodatha o yihargu, they have to either relinquish and renounce their Avodah Zarah and take upon themselves, as the Rambam explains elsewhere in Yichot Melachim, take upon themselves Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach, or we are to put them to death. We're not allowed to agree that there should be people who worship Avodah Zarah in Eretz Yisrael. That's what the Rambam says here. The Rambam continues and he says, "Wa'asul l'rahim aleihem she'ne'emar v'lo t'chonem." It is also forbidden to have mercy on these people. She'ne'emar v'lo t'chonem. In other words, the Torah wants us to either force them to do the one or to destroy them, not to have pity on them. Lefichach im ra'ah. Therefore, the Rambam says, and this halacha is true in all times and all this, even though the original statement we just said now about making a pact, making a treaty with Goyim, it refers to Eretz Yisrael, because obviously when Jews are in Galuth, living in Poland or in Morocco, they're not in a position to dictate the terms of social intercourse with them, between themselves and the other people. But the following halakha applies at all times, in all places, even in Galuth. And the proof that you'll presently see for this is the Shulchan Aruch, which is a book which relates to any halachot, which apply also in time of Galuth, also quotes his halacha, as you will see in a moment. Lefichach, says the Rambam, Im ra'a oved avodah zarah, if a person saw, a Jew saw a non-Jew who worships avodah zarah, oved, or tove'a banaha, who's in a situation where his life is at great risk, such as, he slipped and he's clinging to, a branch on the edge of a cliff, and if you don't help him, eventually he's going to snap, or he's not going to be able to hold forever, and he'll disappear. He'll fall. Or tovea b'nahar, or he's drowning in the river, and you can jump in and save him, but or not. So the Rambam says, Lo ya'alenu, you're not supposed to raise him up, in other words, help him, you're not supposed to save his life. In other words, this person, because he's a worshipper of Avodah Zarah, by definition, he's Hayav Mitha. He's worthy and culpable for what his actions, he's worthy of being put to death. But as the Tosafot explained in the Masechet Avodah Zarah, Daf Samach Dalet, no one is put to death, Jew or non-Jew, without being first brought before a Beth Din. In other words, he has to be tried. If he's guilty of something, he has to be tried for what he's guilty of. So you cannot execute any person without a Beth Din first hearing the case. But if you now, in a situation, you're walking along the riverbank and you see someone drowning, and you know who this person is, you know he's a worshipper of Avodah Zarah, you're not supposed to help him. And therefore, Rambam continues, Ra'ahu lakuah lamuth, and if you see that he's about to die, or he's in a situation where this is likely to happen, lo yasilenu, you should not save him. Aval la'abedo b'yedo, however, to initiate this situation, in other words, to go out of your way to kill him directly, or l'dahafo levor, or to push him into a pit or some such a situation where if you were to take such an action, he would then eventually die, even if it wouldn't be immediately, such as pushing him to some pit from which he couldn't climb out. That's not permitted. Why, says the Rambam? He doesn't actually mention the explanation I just said in the name of Tosafot about having to bring him before a Beth Din, but he adds, because he is not in a state of war with us. Now, it's necessary to point out that the Rambam's, this whole statement of the Rambam here about seeing a person drowning or in a dangerous situation where his life is at risk, where you can either save him or just ignore him, this is based on a Baraita, which appears in Masechet Avodah Zarah Daf Kaf Wow, and is quoted by all the Pusakim. And there it doesn't mention anything about a person being in a state of war or not being in a state of war. It just says, Goyim, who are of the Avodah Zarah, if you find them in this situation, don't help them. In other words, they're culpable, they're guilty, they should be put to death. Right now, maybe there's no Beth Din that's able to deal with the case, but if they're in that situation, Hashem is in charge of the situation. In other words, don't get involved, don't interfere with Hashem's way of dealing with it. But to directly go and kill such a person by your own direct action, that is asur. And the Rambam adds, and the Rambam is adding something here, which the Baraita over there in Avodah Zarah does not mention, because this person is not at war with us. Which implies, of course, quite obviously, that if he is in a state of war with us, then you can in fact, should do away with him even directly. And the Tosafot, by the way, on this Baraita Masechet Avodah Zarah, make this point that this is all in a situation where there is no milhama, no war, no state of war exists between us and this person who's in this situation. But if there is such a situation pertaining between us, then the halakha that we read before from the Mechilta, Hatov Shebagoyim Harog B'Sha'at Milhama, or Masechet Soferim, the Tosafot and others also claim that it's written, it appears in the Yerushalmi at the end of Masechet Kiddushin, but in our version of the Yerushalmi it doesn't appear. But maybe in some other versions, once upon a time it did. At any rate, it's quoted in a couple of places in Chazal at least. In before us, we have it in the Mechilta and in Masechet Soferim Perek Tet Wow. The Tosafot say there, because if he's in a state of war with us, then you can do away with him directly. The Rambam added this piece of information to this halacha, based on this halacha, Tov Shebagoyim Harog B'Sha'at Milchama. In other words, the Rambam is being posek this halacha, but he's doing it in a very elegant and very concise way. He doesn't bring it as a separate halakha. He brings another halakha which speaks about killing or not killing a certain kind of person in a certain situation. And he says this halakha applies as long as he's not in a state of war with us, from which any rational person should and does infer that if he's in a state of war with us, then your attitude towards this person is and should be different. That's the Rambam. And the Rambam is the basis for the Shulchan Aruch, precisely. Because the Shulchan Aruch, in two places, mentions this halacha about Ovdei Avodah Zarah, who are in a life-threatening situation.
One of those, one source is in the Shulchan Aruch, Yoreh De'ah Siman Kof Nun Ahef Se'if Bef, where he writes that he gives a list of those kinds of people that are in a situation, in such a life-threatening situation that you are not supposed to help. In this place, in Yoreh De'ah, in Siman Kof Nun Chet, Shulchan Aruch just brings this basic halacha. He doesn't mention the matter of warfare, but the mefarshim, some of the mefarshim do on this halacha in Yoreh De'ah. Where the Shulchan Aruch does mention it explicitly is in Choshen Mishpat Siman Tav Kaf He, where he writes the following words. I'm reading from this book rather than what I have here on the computer because, as I just mentioned before, many texts were and still are, many of the ones we have, even digital versions, are censored. It's obvious when you read the halakha you understand why it was censored, why the Goyim wouldn't like this halakha to be written as it should be. But this book is printed more recently from accurate sources, this Shulchan Aruch, and it says that certain kinds of people, when they are in life-threatening situations, you're not supposed to help. And then he goes on to say, this is the end of Siman Tav Kaf He in the Shulchan Aruch, in the Choshen Mishpat. Aval ha-goyim she'en benenu v'na milhama, says the Shulchan Aruch, v'ro'e be'madakam Yisrael, b'makom she'hasadof hem she'Yisrael, b'chayatze b'hem, en mesavim lahem ha-mitha, v'en la-hasilam. As we said before, you're not supposed to kill them directly, but also not supposed to save them. Why did the Shulchan Aruch is quoting exactly the words of the Rambam when he adds these words, "Avala goyim she'en benenu ve'na milhama"? Those words are taken directly from this Rambam here we just read. Here, it's not the word. These words do not appear in the Baraita, in Masechet Avodah Zarah, nor that do they appear in other Rishonim. The Rambam inserted those words to include a situation where the person who you now come across, so you can either save or not save, or kill or not kill, is belongs to an enemy nation who's in a state of war with us. So the Shulchan Aruch writes this halacha: "Avala goyim she'en benenu ve'na milhama." Such people you're not supposed to kill directly, and not supposed to save either if they're of the Avodah Zarah. Which implies that if they are of the Avodah Zarah, if they are in b'masad milhama, if they are in a state of war with us, then you do. This point is made clear, even though it's really self-evident, by the Sama'a. So the Sama'a is the Sefer Me'irat Einayim, one of the famous Mefarshim on the Daf, in the Shulchan Aruch. And he writes, in Siman Yod Hef, De'ilu yesh milchama, because if we are in a state of war with these people, this group of people to whom this person belongs, Al Ze Amru, and here they quote Masechet Kiddushin, Yerushalmi Perek Dalet Halacha Yud Aleph, even though you won't find it there if you look, Masechet Soferim Perek Tethwa Halacha Yod, where you will find it. Tov Shebagoyim Harov Vahaynu Miswa Lahoridan. And he adds, it's not just a heter, it's not just mutar to kill such a person who belongs to a group of people or an ethnic group or a nation that is in a state of war with us. It's a miswa to do so, because all such people pose a potential threat to the Jewish people. So the Sma says, Vahaynu Miswa Lahoridan. It is a miswa to destroy them, to kill them directly, to bring about their death. He also quotes the Tosafot that we just mentioned now also. So from the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch, and as I mentioned to you, it's not just the Shulchan Aruch and the Rambam, it's also another 15 or so Rishonim, it's also in the Tur. I just, for reasons of brevity and time, we're not going to quote every possible source. All the Rishonim, all the Posekim related this statement, which we quoted from the Mechilta, Tov Shebaguim Harog B'Shat Milchama, and the Masechet Soferim. They all relate to it as an halachic statement. Obviously it's halacha. If the Rambam brings it in the Mishneh Torah, which is a book of halacha, it's not a book of stories, it's not a book of Agadah, it's a book of halacha. If he brings it here, if the Shulchan Aruch brings it here, then it's a halacha, clearly. The question is, what is the meaning of this halacha? In other words, the statement says, Tov Shebaguim Harog B'Shat Milchama, in time of war you kill the best of goyim. What does it mean? What does that mean? First of all, the best of goyim. How do you know if he's best? If he's not quite the best? If he's sort of average, middling, or one of the worst of them? How do you know exactly? You have to sit down, have a conversation with him, and have a whole deep philosophical exchange, and then based on that, make some estimation as to whether he's good, bad, or otherwise, and then kill him or not kill him. No, that's obviously not what it means. So what are we talking about here? First of all, the statement, as we just explained previously, is based on the drasha that we saw, which is not just the drasha in the far-fetched sense of the word, but rather in a very down-to-earth, essential pshat sense of the word drasha. In other words, a deep understanding of the pasuk. As we saw, if most of the Egyptians and Paro didn't save their animals from the hail, the only animals left to Mitzrayim must have been those that belonged to Hayareh Dvar Hashem. So therefore, in relation to other Egyptians in their time, in their generation, they were the best. They were the best Egyptians you could find, right? You wouldn't expect to find better. And yet, these same people gave their horses to Paro so he could pursue the Jews, etc., and bring them back to Mitzrayim and subjugate them once again and enslave them once again. So from this, Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai said in the Mechilta, Tov Shebaguim Harog, because when you're in a state of war and great state of conflict with another group of people, any individual who belongs to the other side, obviously his sympathies are with the other side, not with you, right? He may be an average sort of a guy, but if he has to make a choice, he's going to choose his side rather than your side, nachon? I mean, that's how it is in all wars, for example. Why does one soldier shoot at the other soldier on the other side? Because he belongs to the other side. Not because he knows him, because he knows he's not a nice guy or is a nice guy. He just knows he's on the other side. And right now, I'm on this side and he's on the wrong side. If a soldier doesn't believe that he's on the right side and the other guy's on the wrong side, he can't fight. He can't be a soldier. Which is, of course, why it's very hard for us today to fight. So what is this halakha actually telling us? Is it telling us, for example, that if you see another person running at you with a knife in his hand, saying, Allahu Akbar, and he's about to stab you with a knife, that you're allowed to kill him? Is that what this halakha is telling us? That doesn't seem that would be the case. That is true, even if the person running at you with a knife, and even if he is saying, Allahu Akbar, happens to be the Kohen Agadol, or the head of the Sanhedrin. If someone's trying to kill you, you have the right of self-defense. And about such situations, Chazal say, Hakam lahorgecha, hashkem lahorgo. He who rises up to kill you, kill him first. In other words, you rise up earlier and preempt him and kill him first. So, self-defense is not something we needed to learn from Rashbi. That can't be the import of this statement of Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai that's also quoted in the Posekim, as we saw. It also cannot refer to a battlefield situation where you have two armies or two groups and they're all firing at each other. Well, obviously, in a battle, you fire at the other side. Would anyone have imagined otherwise? Obviously, it goes without saying. Rashbi is not stating the obvious. He's telling us something that maybe is less obvious. Now, I'll give you an example of something that's less obvious. I imagine that many of you have heard of the case of the Lamed Hay. The Lamed Hay being the 35 soldiers that were sent from Yerushalayim to Gush Etzion in the War of Independence to try and save the Jews in Gush Etzion who were being overrun by the Arabs, etc. They walked to Gush Etzion at night, they marched at night to Gush Etzion, and the dawn came about and they were out in the open. They hadn't managed to get undercover in time, and they were seen by an elderly Arab shepherd who was out early, out and about, and he saw them. an old man, unarmed, but an Arab, and therefore not likely to be on the side of the Jews, more likely to be on the side of the Arabs, which is what you would expect. And the 35, these Lamedhei, they saw this person, and they knew that there was a risk that he would tell the surrounding Arab villages, they were surrounded by Arab villages, that he would go and tell them that, you know, the Jews are over here, and there's a bunch, and there's not that many of them either, so if you all surround them, you'll get them, which is exactly what happened. And they knew this could happen, but, you know, he's an old man, he's unarmed, so, and Jews don't do such things, right? So, at least that's what some people claim that we're not supposed to do, and therefore, not Rashbi apparently, but that's what certain people think, and therefore they didn't do anything, let him go. And of course he went and told everyone, and they were massacred or killed down to the last man. It's exactly that situation that Rashbi is talking about. When you're in a state of war with another group of people, any individual who belongs to that group of people, that nation, or that tribe, whatever it might be, is a potential threat, a great potential threat to you and your fellow Jews. And therefore, don't think twice. If you're in a state of war with these people, harog, kill. That is the rule of war. War is not a pleasant thing, no one's suggesting it is. Killing generally is a crime, but in warfare it's not a crime, because it's necessary, it's essential, and the Torah permits it. And if you are in war, then you better be very good at it, because if you fight a war and you're not good at it, and you don't go about it the right way, you tend either to lose or at least not achieve the desired results. For example, look at the Second Lebanon War 2 years ago. And you see exactly what happens when you don't exactly know what you're trying to do and why you're trying to do it, and you're not quite sure who's right and who's wrong, then you end up making a lot of noise, but actually not doing anything at all. Rashbi is addressing precisely such a situation, that any member of the other side, civilian or not, old or young, man or woman, makes no difference. All these people pose a threat to your side, to the Jewish people, that is to say, and the ultimate consideration of the Torah and the Halakha is the welfare and the success and the eventual victory of the Jewish people against their enemies. Nothing else can, according to the Torah, be a higher value or a supreme concept or philosophical imperative above and beyond that. The success, the victory, the welfare of the Jewish people, both as a nation and as individuals, every individual person, every individual soldier, every individual civilian, comes before all other considerations. That's what Rashbi is telling you. Tov shebagim harog b'shat milhama, because here you see the Egyptians, who were the best of the bunch, gave their horses to Paro, and he used them to pursue us all the way to Yam Suf. This interpretation is not my own. It's written explicitly in the Kanhag. The Kanhag is the Knesset HaGedolah, an early and very important Aharon, a generation or two after the Shulchan Aruch. And he writes this explanation on this halakha, which is quoted, as we said, in Choshen Mishpat, precisely as I just gave it to you now.